Hello, and thank you for joining us for We Stand for Energy's second telephone town hall. We're here today to talk about how renewable power is shaping the energy conversation in our homes and in our legislatures. My name is Michael, and I work with We Stand for Energy. More than 250,000 people like you are a part of our community, people who want to see smart energy policies out of Washington and our state capitals. We are working to ensure electricity remains reliable, affordable, and increasingly clean for everyone. Now I'd like to briefly introduce our special guest today, Lisa Wood. Lisa is the Executive Director of the Institute for Electric Innovation and Vice President of the Edison Foundation. She promotes the sharing of information, ideas, and experiences among regulators, policymakers, technology companies, thought leaders, and the electric power industry, and provides thought leadership on current issues and innovation in the power sector. She is an adjunct professor at Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies. She is also a non-resident senior fellow in the Energy Security and Climate Initiative at the Brookings Institution. And last but not least, she is an active member of both for-profit and not-for-profit boards, including GE's new energy business, Current, Energate Incorporated, and the National Energy Foundation. Before Lisa speaks, I want to make you aware of how you can participate in the question and answer session during this town hall. If at any time during the call you think of a question for Lisa, simply press star 3. You'll be directed to a live operator waiting to take your question. We'll take you out of the call for just a moment while our operator takes your questions on a separate line. After you've spoken to our operator, you'll be directed back to the town hall. At the end of the call, we will respond to as many questions as we can in the time available. So without further delay, I'd like to introduce and thank the Executive Director of the Institute for Electric Innovation, Lisa Wood. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you, Michael. Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for having me on today's call. For the Capturing the Sun Town Hall, I'm planning to cover three topics today. First, how the nation's overall energy mix is changing and how carbon-free energy is growing. Second, the growth of solar energy and the different types of solar that are available today. And third, the importance of the nation's electric power grid to connect and enable solar energy. In other words, the grid is the biggest battery on Earth. As we explore each of these areas, keep in mind that as our nation's electric power companies work to ensure an energy future that is reliable, safe, affordable, and increasingly clean, we will need smart public policies to get us there. To set the stage, first I'll discuss our nation's energy mix. In other words, what are the different resources that we use here in the U.S. to generate electricity, and which ones produce carbon-free electricity? Overall, as a nation, we use about one-third natural gas, one-third coal, 20% nuclear, 6% hydro, and 7% renewable energy, such as wind and solar, to generate electricity. Three of these resources, nuclear, wind, and solar, generate carbon-free electricity. In fact, nuclear energy generates the majority of our carbon-free electricity today in the U.S., about two-thirds. The mix of resources that we use to generate power has changed dramatically over the past 10 years, and that's continuing. The electric power industry is adding significant amounts of gas, wind, and solar to its resource mix, and coal is declining. As a result, the U.S. power sector has already reduced its carbon emissions 20% below 2005 levels. Second, what major trends are we seeing today? 10 years ago, we started to see a huge uptick in wind. Today, we are seeing exponential growth in solar energy. In the U.S., solar is a megatrend. We love solar, and it produces carbon-free electricity. Solar prices have fallen dramatically over the past few years. We expect solar energy to at least double over the next 5 years. Solar makes sense because solar generates energy during the day when we need it most. You might be hearing a lot about solar energy in your community, so I want to spend a minute talking about your solar choices. There are two kinds of solar energy: universal solar, which comes from large solar power plants and is available to all electric company customers, and private rooftop solar, which typically means solar panels on a single household that serve just that one customer. Finally, for my third topic, I want to say a few words about perhaps the least known fact of all. Both universal solar power plants and private rooftop solar rely on the power grid 24/7, every single day of the year. For private solar, the power grid essentially acts as a giant battery every minute of the day. The power grid provides additional power when the sun isn't shining, for example, and stores excess power when the private solar system produces more than is needed. The power grid is vitally important as we continue to increase our reliance on solar energy in the U.S. It is the integrator and the enabler of solar power. The power grid connects a wide range of resources, including solar, wind, nuclear, gas, coal, and hydro, to virtually power everything we do. To me, the best example is this. We would have no internet without electricity. I think that says it all. In states like Hawaii, California, Arizona, and Nevada, we are witnessing exponential growth in both universal solar power plants and private rooftop solar. In these states, electric companies are investing billions in the power grid so that it can enable and integrate solar energy. Solar is growing exponentially, and it's a vital part of the resource mix used to generate electricity. That's why electric power companies are expanding solar energy options for their customers and making significant investments to help manage the integration of solar energy into the grid. Actions speak louder than words. Electric companies have already demonstrated and will continue to demonstrate a strong commitment to solar energy. In closing, I think we can all agree that solar power is a valuable energy resource, and the electric grid is the essential infrastructure that helps to deliver solar's value and power our lives. In addition to solar, we are fortunate to have a wide range of resources, all homegrown, that generate electricity in the U.S. So let's work together to get the public policies right to ensure a safe, reliable, clean, and affordable energy future for everyone. I look forward to today's discussion.
Lisa, thank you so very much. What an extremely helpful introduction. I want to remind all of our callers that if you want to ask a question, simply press *3, and one of our operators will provide me with that question, and we will be getting to as many questions as we can in the time remaining. I'm going to take a moderator's privilege, though, Lisa, and ask the first question, which has been on a lot of people's mind, which is the energy's transformation, and specifically its transition to cleaner generation sources. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Sure. As I mentioned, the U.S. power sector has already reduced its carbon emissions significantly, 20% below 2005 levels as of the end of last year. The reason for this is that the resource mix used to generate electricity has changed. Over the past 10 years, for example, we've reduced our use of coal, we've almost doubled our use of natural gas, and we've increased our use of renewable energy sources such as wind and solar from about 0.5% in 2005 to almost 6% today. These are major changes in just 10 years. The result has been a tremendous decrease in carbon emissions.
That's really interesting, and we're getting a lot of questions that are coming through, and one hits on a little bit of what you're talking about the modernized energy grid. And Katie from New York, I think, encapsulates it the best. She asks, why is it important to have a modernized energy grid even as more and more solar is being integrated into the grid?
Electric companies, the companies that operate the power grid, are constantly investing in the power grid to maintain and update it. The grid is just, the basic grid is a critical part of our nation's infrastructure. But what's happening today is a little bit different because we are witnessing two major changes. First, we're seeing solar and wind growing rapidly. And these resources, even though they do produce zero carbon emissions, they also can turn on and off very quickly. For example, when a cloud comes by, solar stops producing energy, for example. Second, we are starting to add more and more smaller resources onto the power grid at a lot of different locations. We think about these as distributed energy resources. This means these two things together really mean that the job of the power grid is becoming much more complex. So just think about it. We're moving from a highly centralized electric power system to one with a lot more energy resources around the grid, and we're also incorporating resources that can turn on and off very quickly. So today, electric companies are investing about $20 billion a year in the power grid to do so that it can do the things that it needs to do to accommodate these new resources. And what I find really fascinating is that this is all being done behind the scenes because, of course, we all need electricity 24/7, so the power grid has to keep on running despite all of the changes underway.
You know, Lisa, and Barbara from Texas is bringing this up, and it's sort of linked in with the conversation about the energy grid, and when you talked about how the energy grid is functionally the battery for all of the solar out there, and you used a term, the term was universal solar, and we've been reading about this quite a bit. Can you talk us through a little bit about what actually universal solar is?
Sure. Universal solar simply means solar power plants that generate electricity using solar energy. So you can think of it as a large solar farm. That electricity goes onto the grid and is available to all of the electric company customers. That's why we call it and think about it as universal solar. I also think about it as the democratization of solar, meaning that universal solar makes solar energy available to everyone, regardless of the type of dwelling they live in, regardless of the shape of their roof, and regardless of their income status. So it's very cost effective. Universal solar is a win-win. This is very different than private solar on the rooftop, where solar panels supply power to only a single household.
You know, that might then lend itself to this next question that Wes from Pennsylvania just asked. He's been reading a lot about solar energy in the news, and we keep reading about the regulatory or policy or political challenges that rooftop solar, the electric companies are facing. Can you provide any insight as to sort of what regulatory policy challenges solar faces?
Well, I can provide a little bit. We are definitely hearing a lot about solar in the news today. We're hearing things like don't tax the sun and other phrases. Actually, solar energy is very heavily subsidized today at the federal level and at the state level. As I mentioned earlier, solar is growing exponentially in the U.S., and we expect to go from about 25 gigawatts of solar today to over 80 gigawatts by 2020. That's a tremendous growth projection. So once a power source takes off, as solar is doing today, the subsidies have done the job that was intended, which is to get the resource up and running. That's where we are today. We're witnessing this incredible exponential growth in solar. So what we're hearing in the news is different groups fighting over whether or not to continue the solar subsidies and for how long. So as you know, once someone receives a subsidy, they never want to give it up. But I do think that we should always be asking ourselves, when is it appropriate to sunset a subsidy? A subsidy should not last forever. I suspect it will all get worked out, but I'm not putting any bets on exactly when that will happen.
Thanks, Lisa. Yeah, no, I mean, it's an interesting debate that's going on out there. John from Missouri, though, is taking us a bit more broadly. I think he's picking up on some of the comments you made early on in your talk about the broad role of renewables in the future. I know that you really are an expert on some of the big key trends in your industry. And could you walk us through maybe some of the macro trends that you're seeing out there, solar and otherwise?
Sure. My organization is very focused on trends that are driving change in the power sector. And right now we're looking at three major trends. The first, which is also the subject of this town hall, is the transition to cleaner energy. We've already talked about that a lot. More solar, more wind, more gas, and less coal. Second is the digitization of the power grid and the growth in distributed energy resources, such as electric vehicles, storage, energy efficiency, and also rooftop solar. And third is the customization of services for customers, or you can think about it as the individualization of customer services. So increasingly today, we are seeing customers asking for specific services. So one big one is renewable energy. For example, some large corporations with sustainability goals are now asking their electric companies for 100% renewable energy to meet those sustainability goals. Another example is households. Households, we're seeing this more and more across the country, households are subscribing to solar programs to, in part, encourage electric companies to build more solar. It really is amazing. Solar, as I said earlier, is a mega trend, but we're also seeing, and that's part of the larger clean energy mega trend.
So taking it really close to home, Sally out of Nevada, I think it's picking up on what you were talking about in terms of customization or the digitization of the power grid. And she asks that she's been hearing a lot about smart energy grids and smart energy meters. And, you know, can you talk a little bit about what changes you might expect in the coming years when it comes really to energy and people's homes, like Sally's talking about?
Sure. So smart meters, I'll just define it quickly, are digital smart meters that allow for two-way communication, so a two-way information flow and two-way power flows for between, say, a household and the grid or between a commercial building and the power grid. So today in the U.S. we have about 65 million smart meters deployed. That's about 50% of all U.S. households in this country. And that's continuing to grow, and we'll see more smart meters over the next 5 years. And what smart meters allow is a lot more communication between the electric company and the customer and the electric company. So we're seeing more services come into the electric space where electric companies can provide more services to their customers. For example, one big example is just the sort of the trend in energy efficiency, where you just see a lot more different kinds of energy efficiency. Another one is a trend in offering smart prices to customers, and even rooftop solar, really. The smart meter is absolutely critical in terms of basically bringing power to that home when the power needs it and then taking power from that home when the home produces excess power. So smart meters sort of enable that basic communication, and communication in terms of information, but also in terms of energy communication between the grid and the customer.
Thank you. So Rachel in Arizona is taking us a little bit more broadly. You've touched on a lot of that solar and universal solar is one of the big mega trends, and a lot of the electric companies that I'm reading about, I imagine that's where Rachel is getting this question from. Can you talk to us a little bit about what some of these solar programs actually look like? If from a customer perspective, you know, what do they look like? Can you describe them to us? Bring them real for us.
Sure. I'll give you a couple of examples. I can't remember if you said Rachel from Arizona, but I'm going to give you an Arizona example.
So it is. It's Arizona. Rachel out of Arizona.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So in Arizona, for example, one of the companies, the electric companies in Arizona, has a couple of different options for their customers. One, they have large-scale universal solar. But they also have a rooftop program for their customers where their customers can enter into a long-term agreement with the utility where they can also opt out at any time. But the utility puts the basically solar panels on their rooftop and manages and operates the solar panels for the customer. So that's one example of a program. Another program actually that's available in Arizona is a community solar program where customers can opt in to that particular community solar project. And I believe it's in a technology part of Tucson, sort of a technology area. So there's that. And the last example I'll give is Rocky Mountain Power in Utah is about to offer, or may already be offering, a subscription solar program. And that's also very typical, where customers can basically subscribe to a specific amount of solar that they want each month.
So taking moderator's privilege here, it's been a series of beautiful days in my home, bright and sunny, but over the 4th of July, it was cloudy. And we're talking a lot about sort of the real move towards solar and the right energy mix and whatnot, but all of us expect that our lights are going to flip on when we turn them on, or our TVs will flip on when we turn them on. You know, what is the right energy mix today and in the future? What is the right opportunity for us to develop policies to go make this to ensure that we always have the reliable energy that we've always enjoyed?
Okay, well, I'm not sure there's a right mix, but I'll give you a couple of examples just responding to some of the different things that you just brought up. One is sort of a cloudy day, right? So we're increasing our use of renewables in the U.S., both solar and wind, and these are what we think of as intermittent power sources. It means that they don't run all the time, and they can turn on and off fairly quickly. If a cloud comes over in the afternoon, for example, solar panels will stop producing energy. So at that point, the power grid still needs that energy to keep the entire grid in balance. So if a bunch of solar power plants stop producing, other power sources need to kick in right away. And typically, those are natural gas power plants that are kicking in when one resource goes down quickly. Usually a natural gas plant will kick in to keep the whole power grid in balance. So that's one scenario. A second scenario is this. During some parts of the day, so say very, very early in the morning or at night, solar is not really producing much power or any power. So in this case, we also need power to be available to produce electricity for the people that are using electricity. And typically, those are either nuclear plants, coal plants, or gas plants. And that's called baseload generation because it's available all the time to provide this basic level of electricity. So with all these power sources, in particular, with nuclear, gas, and coal, you have a very good idea of exactly how much electricity will be produced. But with wind and solar, there's a lot more uncertainty. So there's a lot of forecasting and things that go on to figure out, okay, when's the wind going to be blowing and those kinds of things. And we've gotten very good at it, but there still are things like clouds that come over. So we do need this mix of resources to produce electricity so that when something goes away, another power source can kick in. Absolutely essential.
And so Trent from Connecticut pinged in about battery storage and the question about, is battery storage something that is going to be, that we're going to be seeing more and more often? I see on the news quite a bit sort of the talk about it will be, but use your crystal ball a little bit and frankly the fact that you're an expert in this space, and talk to us a little bit maybe about some of the battery storage options that are out there.
Yeah, that's a really, really good question. And I just want to say one thing. I talked early on about 10 years ago we started seeing wind really take off. In the last few years, we've seen solar take off. And I think in the next few years, we'll start to see storage take off. And the reason for that is we do have in California a storage mandate, which requires electric companies to invest in a certain amount of storage by 2020 and to bring that storage online. So we're seeing a lot of storage companies in California working on this. And storage is a game changer for the electric power industry because it allows you to store electricity. And that's something for those of us in the power sector, we think of it as sort of the holy grail, because electricity has to be balanced every minute of the day. And if you can actually store it, it just changes the picture in terms of what's possible. So I do think that we will be seeing a lot more storage in the future. I think we're still at the beginning stages. It's still expensive, but just even in the last 2 years, we've seen prices come down. So I think we'll continue to see improvement in the technology.
JJ out of Massachusetts is asking a question about the U.S. vis-a-vis the rest of the world. The question is, would you say the U.S. is leading the way in regards to cleaner renewable energy? And how do we compare with other countries? And in that comparison, how do you think we can become more competitive?
That's a lot of questions.
It's a lot of questions.
In terms of the U.S. versus the rest of the world, it really depends on what part of the world. I mean, as I mentioned at the beginning, we've changed our power mix quite a lot over the last 10 years. And in the power sector, we've reduced carbon emissions significantly. And we will continue to do that. We are on a road to do that, to reduce carbon emissions significantly. But it's not just the power sector that produces carbon. We also have the transportation sector and other areas. But carbon and transportation electricity and transportation are the two biggest areas. So I'd say in the power sector, we've done it. We have made significant changes in terms of carbon reduction, and in terms of our integration of renewable energy. So that's one part of it. I can't remember the second part of the question. Sorry.
The second part is: do you think that there are any one or two things that could make us more competitive, if you will, on the global stage, or do you think we're really sort of on the right path?
I think we're definitely on the right path, and the reason why is we have very low electricity prices in the U.S., and one of the reasons we have that is because we have a mix of energy sources producing electricity, and even though we're integrating renewables, we're integrating them as prices come down. So the one comparison I would make is I think the one that most people think about maybe is Germany. Germany made a lot of major policy decisions in a very short time to integrate renewable and to close their nuclear plants. As a result, power prices for residential customers have actually gone up 38% in Germany. I don't think that would happen in the U.S. given what I know about policymakers in the U.S. and regulators in the U.S. I think that having any sort of price increase like that would not be okay. So I think from an electricity perspective, we are very competitive with our power prices.
Well, I think on that very optimistic note, we'll have to close out today's Teleton Hall. We're out of time for this particular part of the program. And to our audience, I want to thank everyone for joining us today to discuss the growth of renewable energy in our country. If you haven't already, please visit We Stand for Energy today by visiting our website at www.westandforenergy.com. If you're already a member of We Stand for Energy, please spread the word to your friends and neighbors because, as you've heard on this call today, these issues affect us all. Lisa, our deepest appreciation and thanks for spending some of your time today with us and our community. Thank you again, and have a great afternoon.
Thank you.